You're listening to the Riverfront Church broadcast, a place to explore faith, history, ideas, and more.
Hi, friends. We are here at the Riverfront Church 505 podcast. I'm gathered here with some of my friends we have over there.
Pastor Edwin!
That's Pastor Edwin, in case you can't understand the sing talking. And
subtitles. Check for subtitles. Can there be subtitles on podcasts, Ken?
And we have Pastor Chelsea.
Yes!
Yay!
And the host.
Oh, I'm Pastor Emma. So we are here with Chelsea. We have a brand new voice on our podcast.
Yes.
Today.
I'm excited. We are welcoming her from Washington.
District of Columbia by way of Detroit. By way of Newark.
Newark, Delaware. So it's kind of a somewhat of a homecoming, although Wilmington and Newark are pretty different.
Very different.
Emma, those are her stomping grounds right there. Newark. Sure. So she knows what's up. I'm at a loss. I only know like four places in Newark.
Well, I'm finding that I thought I knew Delaware geography really well. I thought I could get places quickly. And yet, getting from Newark to places and Wilmington to places, they're very different.
Very different.
You should put it in your Google Maps before you get on the road.
And then there are all the one-way streets in Wilmington.
I can do that. I'm all right with that.
And then there's all the parking issues, but we won't bring those up in this particular podcast. But we are excited because Chelsea is co-convening minister for Riverfront 505 Worship and has been meeting all sorts of people. But before we get to what you're doing, what you plan to do, because frankly, the way these podcasts go, that might be podcast number three with you. So this 3 or 17-part interview, we don't know. But we wanted our listeners to meet, quote-unquote, Chelsea by way of podcast. But also there are some physical opportunities to meet Chelsea. So meet Chelsea at Chelsea Tavern on Market Street, and that is in downtown Wilmington, and that will be at 5.05 p.m. We'll roughly be there around until 7-ish or so. Depends on who shows up and how good the food is and whether Emma's buying another round. So all depending.
And what's the date on that, just in case people are listening to this on different days?
The date is Wednesday, February... That's a great question. Editing 19th. Ken...
19th.
Okay. Wednesday, February 19th at 5.05 p.m. We have Meet Chelsea at Chelsea Tavern. And that will be at 5.05 p.m. until around 7-ish. Again, depending on how crazy things get, how much we dream and brainstorm and how much fun we have. So you are all welcome and invited. We will grab the food. You can pick up your drinks. And we will have some really good conversation. We'll also have, there'll be other opportunities to meet Chelsea, but that was one we wanted to highlight. We also had one at Wilmington Brew Works. So we had some folks, some core folks come on out and say what's up. That was a fun time. Anyway, I just wanted to plug that in because that's a cool spot.
It's a great plug.
Yeah. It's a community space that, you know, came with a vision from Craig, and they were really wonderful. So it was good. But before we get to what you are doing, plan to do, hope to do, we want to kind of ask you about you our listeners can get a sense of who you are. So Pastor Emma and I are just going to go back and forth and ask some questions. Emma tends to ask better questions, so we're hoping that she can either clean up my questions or come up with better follow-ups. But my first question is, how did you get to ministry? What drew you into ministry? What motivated you into ministry? And Jesus doesn't count as the answer, because Jesus is always the answer, is what I hear, according to Ken. But besides, obviously, the movement of Jesus, what was the motivating factor for ministry?
So, first, Jesus.
Okay. There we go.
There it is.
Rule number one.
God. Jesus. God, Holy Spirit, all of it, Trinity, all of it, right? The second was really my home church. So grew up at Newark United Methodist and was a place of family really early on. Like, started going to church with my Nana, and my home pastors were just really cool people, and they let middle school and high school students into, like, high-up worship planning stuff. Whoa, if we wanted to be there.
Nice.
And
who are the pastors, just to give them a shout-out?
Yeah, so shout-outs. So Reverend David Palmer.
David Palmer, what?
Woo! Yeah. And he's still who I consider to be my pastor. He retired from there a couple years ago, but is still in the area and is still, like, my mentor, my go-to when a day's hard. He's the guy I call.
Good.
Also, so, like, in end of high school, beginning of college, Reverend Jim Falto, who actually was the pastor here at Grace.
Right. That's right.
At Grace UMC for a little while. And then he was at Newark, and our paths crossed at Newark. And so
look at that.
Just Delaware connections.
All the connections, yes.
All over the place.
Very Delaware.
Very Delaware. Yeah, and then Reverend Mary Haggard, who was youth and then campus pastor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, so all shout-outs to those pastors.
Shout-outs to those pastors.
The youth are paying attention. They see what you're doing.
For sure.
So don't feel discouraged. Good work. Good work.
Yeah, so, like, those folks just kind of kept, like, nudging me, kept, like, giving me opportunities, but weren't super forceful about it, which is what I needed because I didn't want to be told what to do with my life. Mm. So they just kept providing space, and I kept saying yes to that. And then, and sometimes I would say no, right? But they were cool about it regardless of my answer. And somewhere along the way, I realized that I really liked worship planning. I really liked thinking creatively about what worship could look like. I really found a home in this community. And this community of, like, some older, some younger, some, like, lots of diversity in that congregation. And I just found myself spending, like, more and more and more time there until I was like, well, you know what, maybe there's something going on
maybe
here.
Maybe they should pay the bills.
Maybe they should also pay the bills. Yeah. So, thought about going to, like, a Bible undergrad, and talked with those pastors, and all three of them told me no. Not the answer I was expecting.
No offense to our biblical college alumni.
Yeah, no, but they all said no. They're like, you know what? You know Bible already, and so you should go to undergrad for something else.
Wow.
And if the call to ministry is still there, it'll be there after college, and you'll have to go to seminary anyway if you're going to be ordained. Right. So go to college for something else.
Wow, good advice.
Yeah, it was
wise. I mean, I guess depends on the person, but I think that's there's some wisdom there.
It worked out well for me.
Yeah.
So where did you go to undergrad for?
Yeah, so I went to the University of Delaware, majored in human services, which is Delaware's, like, equivalent of social work, and did my 4 years there. My last semester was a full-time internship with Family Promise. And so got plugged into nonprofit world and case management world.
And got to meet Carolyn Gordon. What? Shout out.
Yeah.
Who is now, like, a regional director.
Yeah, she's, like, moved on up. She's
in Jersey.
Yeah, she's, like, expanded. She expanded Family Promise here in Newcastle and now is doing regional work and training for them.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm excited to be back here in this area to be, I mean, it's crazy to me that Family Promise just had a huge part in my beginnings, and now there's, like, potential for future partnership, and so after Family Promise and undergrad, I was tired of school. I was tired of, like, learning about people, and I was ready to actually be with some people. So a lot of friends thought I was going to go right to seminary, but I decided that wasn't right. I needed some time away from the classroom. And so said yes to a 2-year internship with United Methodist Church. And they could have placed me, like, anywhere in the world. And I ended up in Detroit.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was kind of, like, through the work I was doing at Family Promise with folks with families experiencing homelessness that the Board of Global Ministries placed me in Detroit doing case management.
And were you really open to any place in the world? Like,
yeah, I really was. I had friends that were applying that, like, had specific, like, I want to go to this country, I want to go out of the country, and I, like,
I didn't really have a specific place in mind. Like, God didn't say, you're going to go here in the world.
But if they would have said, like, Reading, Pennsylvania, would you have been like, yeah, or would you be like, really? Like, Reading, Pennsylvania? offense against Reading, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I mean, hey, Reading, Pennsylvania.
You know? Yeah. I mean, they try not to place you too close to home. Like, that's a thing. They try to, like, place you.
So there were some limitations.
Yeah, like, I wasn't going to be in the Northeast.
Right.
Because they're trying to, like, get you out of the geographic area.
And Hawaii, you would have totally said no.
Yeah, definitely like, nope, say no to Hawaii.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. No to Hawaii. No,
and then, like,
no.
but really, like, so if they would have said, hey, Tajikistan, you know, you're like, okay.
All right.
Let's do this.
Let's go.
So that's a wonderful openness there.
Yeah. It was like a crazy couple of months as I had put in my application, and you are told, folks from the U.S., like, some are just accepted into their U.S.-only program, and then some are accepted both into that and the international, and I was accepted into both those tracks, and so for a couple of months there, I, like, knew I was going to be somewhere. Like, I had been accepted into the program, but I didn't know where, which was kind of crazy.
Right.
And also really exciting.
Yeah.
Right? To be, like, graduating college and be like, well, I'm going somewhere.
Right.
Yeah, so that led to Detroit, and I was doing case management there, with a nonprofit that their kind of entry point for folks is lunch, and so they serve lunch Monday to Friday, and different churches sponsor those lunches, and then, but they have case management in that space, they have, housing resources in that space, medical, transportation, we're a mailing address, just like one-stop shop.
Right.
And
so they had a ton of partnerships with other organizations, I'm imagining.
Yeah, they were definitely keen on, like, they weren't the best at everything, and so they tried to bring in the best in all these different fields.
What a wonderful model. I mean, I just feel like you don't bump into many organizations like that that are willing to say, hey, that's not what we do well, but we can connect you and make that happen and see that as part of partnership and not a threat, like we're all in this together kind of thing. And it's so rare, but, and yet when it happens, I feel like the collaboration just leads to such better results, right? Overall, in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the organization was called the NOAA Project.
The NOAA Project.
Yeah. Okay. And so they were all about, like, they were the folks that created space for other people to enter in. So for so many of our clients, they would come for months and months and sometimes years just for lunch. And that was cool, right? If that's what folks needed at that time, cool. Come for lunch. Right. And so just, like, would do as much, like, official case management one-on-one, like, in my office as I did unofficial
on the fly,
like, walking through the community center floor.
Yeah.
Like, that was where the real magic happened.
Right.
And if you could, like, be real in that space and be honest about how your day was going in that space, then folks really would trust us on that deeper stuff.
Right. Yeah, and there's some of that. I mean, what's interesting is you point that out, because we haven't even talked about all of these things yet. So, you know, I'm learning things myself. And with what we're trying to do, you know, Riverfront and the Grace Church partnership with the Creative Arts District, and, you know, just all these different pieces, and one of them being the cafe. And the whole point of the cafe is it's not supposed to be a social service office, but it's also not, you know, it's not like the government office where you have to go apply, or it's not like a business where it's like, excuse me, if you're not going to buy coffee, please leave. It's supposed to be a space where that can exactly happen, right? So that, you know, we're in this partnership with Friendship House, who is an organization that very similarly says, hey, how can we fill in gaps? We're not here to compete. We might not be good at that. Let's do it a different way. For them to have social workers who are here to just have coffee and whoever they happen to meet and whatever comes out of that. And then that can morph into official one-on-ones. So we have space that they can use for that to become, okay, here's a one-on-one triage of what's going on. But otherwise, it's just coffee. It's just people meeting, right? It's a Sabbath space.
Yeah.
And it's human dignity and all those kinds of pieces. So the third space idea. Mm-hmm. And so that's just really cool that was what was already happening for you in Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, like, those unofficial spaces of casework were my favorite, right? Like, I would I would have to make sure that folks that were like there to see me for one-on-one actual casework, like I wasn't late to those appointments because I would get wrapped up in these on-the-fly conversations and like that just like magic of community that happened around those tables as volunteers would come in. And some of those volunteers, it was their first time ever in downtown Detroit. And for some of those volunteers, they were there every Thursday. And right. our clients just really being open to whoever was there that day. Mm-hmm. And also being really good at figuring out who was there because they actually wanted to be there and who was there because it was like an obligation.
Right.
I totally like got called out a couple times of like, folks would like ask me how my day was and I would say good and they'd be like, really, is it good? And like, they wanted to know for real. Like, are you actually having a good day? Right. And so, also just like in past, like, so this community center would have like 200 people at a time in this space. And, sometimes I would just be like passing somebody by and say like, hey, how's it going? And but I didn't really, like, I wasn't really stopping to, like, right. hear how it was going. Yeah. I was just greeting them, right? And I'll never forget, I had one guy, I had maybe worked there, like, 3 months, and I had this greeting, and I kept walking. And he was like, hey! Hey, you! And I, like, turned. I turned back, and I'm like, hey, what's up? And he was like, you asked me how it was going. Did you actually want to know?
Whoa. Nice call out.
Right?
3 months in.
3 months in. And I, like, it stopped me dead in my tracks, right? And I was like, yeah, actually, I do really want to know. Mm. And he was like, really? Because you kept on walking. Like, you didn't want to know. And I apologized, and I named, like, I shouldn't have said how it was going if I wasn't going to stop.
Yeah.
And that, man, that interaction, so that was 6 years ago now.
Right.
That interaction has changed how I ask the question, mm-hmm. how's it going? Because I don't ask that question anymore. Unless I want to know.
Right.
Right? And unless I'm prepared to, like, take the time to stop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it just, and it amazes me now, like, how often
people ask
all the time.
Right.
Right? You ask that question, not just you, but, we as a community ask that question so often. And it's like, you don't actually want to know.
You're right.
And if I actually told you, like, are you ready?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just, moments like that really, in my time in Detroit really shaped how I see ministry and how I live like my day to day.
Right. And you were how long in Detroit?
So I was there for 2 years, and was originally planning to stay for longer. I really fell in love with that city and with the people and my job. But my family is in Newark and my Nana was really sick that second year, that spring. And so on like an emergency trip home, I just felt like I needed to be closer. Mm. I had driven back, for that visit, cause it was like my mom called and said, you should come tomorrow kind of a deal. And flights last minute are expensive, so I got in my car and drove. And that weekend at the hospital, I just realized I needed to be closer than a 9-hour drive. And my Nana is still around and is doing pretty well. But that visit just kind of led me to realize that I wanted to be closer.
Right.
That was like in April, and my 2-year commitment was wrapping up in July. And so started looking for jobs pretty much from DC to Philly, right, in a 2-hour kind of circle from Newark. And was back and forth between staying in case management world and really considered working for Habitat for Humanity here in Newcastle. I applied and was offered that position, and also applied for a job in Bowie, Maryland, with a church as their director of Christian formation, and was back and forth between the two, and ultimately decided to say yes to the job in Bowie, after some discernment and some folks saying, like, now's your time to figure out if you actually like the church. Right? Like, as I was continuing to think about seminary and ordination and all of these pieces, this was the moment of, do I actually like working for a church? And what is church, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my time in Bowie was really great. And I found out that I really do like working for the church. And some of the faith-based pieces that were missing in my time in Detroit were definitely filled in my time in Bowie. Mm.
So Noah Project didn't have like a faith-based aspect.
So we were based out of a church. We had started as a ministry of the church, but in becoming their own nonprofit, there was not really a direct faith connection.
Right.
And so I like really yearned for being able to like do communion with our clients and being able to not like require it, but just like offer spaces for study or offer spaces of worship. And that piece was definitely missing.
Mm. It feels like possibly the work that you've been called to do here at Riverfront is a little bit of a synthesis of those two different worlds you've existed in. So I'm wondering how you're experiencing that already, or are you, or kind of what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, that was really that combination of the community-based work, the nonprofit experience, the church experience, is really what drew me to Riverfront and Grace Partnership. I feel like there are very few churches that are doing the work like Grace and Riverfront are, and definitely few places that we're going to offer a job description like the one that I have, right? Some friends joked with me that as I shared my job description, as I was discerning whether or not to take this position, they joked, like, was this written for you? because it really is, like, this really cool combination.
This is from your journal entry.
Yeah.
And like, we found it.
And then you published it. Mm-hmm. And I really love the fact that it wasn't, right? That y'all were looking for this kind of position and this new step without me in mind, right? I didn't want a position that was created, like, for me, but one that really was from the needs of the community, and then I found. I think I'm really excited for this combination of being able to lead worship and being able to bridge some of the nonprofit partners that are already happening with Grace and with Riverfront, and being able to just show up in the community and that to like count as my work. That's crazy to me that all of these things, like all these things that I would normally be doing and just like doing on the side because it's who I am, like is now part of my official role.
Yeah.
Excited to just see how that continues to grow and these partnerships continue to expand. For sure.
Yeah. So what did your experiences, so some of it might be obvious to some people, but how do you feel they prepared you for where you're at now? So what were those experiences that you feel like, yeah, I can, I'm, this might be a challenge, but I'm also ready to take this challenge.
Mm-hmm. So my time in Bowie, so I was with St. Matthew's United Methodist, and they were really the folks who helped me name my call as pastor, right? Before that, I would have not called myself pastor, would not have, like, seen myself in that kind of a role. But it was really with them that I was leading worship, that I was preaching, that I was doing pastoral care stuff in, like, official hospital visits, but also, like, on the soccer field. And at my kids and youth's concerts and just like continuing to show up in those places to really say like, I love and I care about you, not just when you walk in the doors on Sunday morning, but all the time, right? Like I wanted to know, so children and youth ministry were kind of my focus areas at St. Matthew's. And like, I wanted to know what my kids loved Monday through Saturday as much as what made them excited for church on Sunday. And found that like in showing up in those spaces, I got to know their people, right? I got to spend time with their parents and their siblings, and I got to meet their friends and their friends' parents and siblings. And just amazing how like storytelling happens in those spaces. Kind of in a similar way to like the unofficial spaces of casework in Detroit, right? And so had some experience there with preaching and teaching and leading programming. And we tried a lot of new things at St. Matthew's. There were a lot of new retreats and new kind of spiritual practices that we did together and a new worship time. And so some creativity there. And so creating is not foreign to me. And I learned a lot about that creative process with St. Matthew's, of the time and the intentionality and the, we're going to maybe fail at this and we're going to try again. Right. And that creativity and that like openness about Riverfront and grace is really exciting to me.
So what book are you reading and what book do you think we should be reading?
Yeah, so I am currently in seminary at Wesley Theological, and I'm in my like third of 4 years in that program. So right now I'm just reading a lot of things for school. But I'm also in the beginning of the semester, and so I'm unsure about how I feel about all these books that I'm reading for school. So just know that I'm reading for school. I'm reading lots of reading.
So give us some samples.
So for school, I'm reading some books about finance, about finance and like Christian
the business
practices,
of the church.
Right?
Are Emma's you reading making, the business of the church.
Yeah, I'm not reading the business of the church. Like, Emma's making some weird like faces.
The
like,
seminary did not offer that class.
Yeah, so that, yeah.
Oh, no. That we seriously just had a whole conversation about
no shout
that.
Out to my seminary.
Yeah. No, this is like Wesley Seminary. Shout out to Wesley. They are on the cutting edge of requiring these classes for their seminarians, requiring personal finance and others.
Yes.
So that's awesome.
Smart.
Yeah, so it's a book. It's a book by Mike Slaughter. It's something like Christian Growth and Money, but I'm butchering that title. So if you like Google Mike Slaughter Money, you'll get it.
Yeah.
So that one's pretty good so far. Again, early in the semester. And then I'm reading a lot of articles right now for my public theology class. That one has like different stuff each week. And then I have an ethics class. And so I'm trying to think about the name of that book. Yeah, it's not going to come.
Is it like an anthology? Is it different?
Yeah, it's an anthology. And, okay. Yes.
So are there like, so what are some big names that are featured in that of people doing ethics? Like,
yeah, so there's some by, the book that I have in mind is by Barbara Brown Taylor.
Okay.
Mm. And just her experience as a pastor and the kind of practical case study, crazy examples that bring in ethical dilemmas.
Okay.
So that's
so it's not
good.
Like Christian ethics, it's like practical
it's a bit
ministry
of both.
Ethics.
It's a bit of
or
both.
Or both, okay.
Yeah, it's a bit of both. And again, that's a piece that like, so Edwin and I have talked a lot of seminary stuff recently, and that's a piece I really love about Wesley, because even in this class on Christian ethics, it's really getting practical, and we're only in week three.
That's huge.
I'm reading a lot of books for school that obviously I can't remember all the names of. Failed on names.
But all right, but you gave us a sense. Okay,
yeah,
so
there's
some mythologies,
there's
a lot of academic reading and background stuff.
Yeah, but I'm also like towards the end of my studies, and so it's not as theoretical and as like big theology as it was in like year one. It kind of gets more specific, and I've been liking it. I've like loved seminary, but I've especially loved seminary in the last year or so.
Yeah. Is there a theologian or a preacher or a writer that you were introduced to in seminary really and have come to like, oh my gosh, this has been my life source, or it's just given you a sense of life?
So I've really enjoyed, I hadn't really read a ton of him before seminary, but like Howard Thurman's work.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Solid.
Yeah.
Solid work. I really love, it's really dense, but I really loved Bonhoeffer's work, right? Like, that's stuff that I have to read 5 times before I understand what a sentence says, but it's good. It's good once I get it.
Right.
Right. So just really grateful for Wesley and for seminary in this time and this phase of life. But if I was going to say books that people should be reading, I mean, all those books, seminary professors, other people should read them.
For class.
But books for fun, at least they were fun for me. So when I started working in Detroit, my boss handed me Tattoos on the Heart by Gregory Boyle.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, good stuff, right? And it's really good about showing up for people. It's really good in, like, question asking. It's really just...
He spoke in Wilmington recently. Within a year?
Here in Wilmington, or did he speak up at the place in Lancaster?
No, here in Wilmington.
Okay.
Yeah.
I missed him in Wilmington?
Yes.
Shoot. I did too. I should have come up. I wasn't that far away.
Yeah.
I don't even remember hearing about it. But
I remember, I mean, I took so many notes because, like, every time he opened his mouth, it was a quote.
Right? I'm upset about this.
I'm being blamed for not telling you. And Ken probably sent an email to all of us, let's be honest, and, you know, told us to go. But,
anyway. It was before Ken and I were friends. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing about it is, I mean, it was just every line. Because, you know, you have your notebook out and you're like, oh, okay, you know, little notes. No, it was every line. I basically wrote down his speech. And then on top of that, I got a recording of his speech.
And then you wrote it down again.
I mean, it was just so powerful. But one of the things I remember is he's sitting there, you know, the governor's there, there's a senator there, the mayor's there, all these, like, big wigs are there, right? And they have all just spoken, right? And they're going, here's what we're doing to address gun violence in the city of Wilmington and jobs and money and housing, you know, and all great stuff that you want to hear. Cool. And he gets up and he says, listen, with all due respect, you know, I have met, you know, through the work that I've, you know, been doing that, in, you know, that you can read about in the book. It's like, I have met people that we got jobs for, great paying jobs, dream jobs, benefits, and I've seen them go back to jail. I have met people who we got them into school, top schools, you know, completely changed their lives in some senses and go back to jail. We've gotten people housing and they've gone back to jail. He's like, but I've never met somebody with a healed soul go back to jail. And he's like, and that's something that, you know, and that's when he turns to them, that's something you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't just do that by policy and directive. That's relationship, showing up, meeting with people. And I just, that has just stuck with me. I mean, because it just confirms so much of my experience, but it also tells me, wow, this is a deep soul right here. He knows what's up. He wasn't by any means trying to sell how cool his program was. He was like, it wasn't a program for me, right? It was a way of life. It was, oh, the needs of the community. Okay, what if we did this? And, you know, he kind of jokes about some things really worked, you know? You know, like Homies Landscaping or Homeboys Landscaping. That works. He's like, Homeboys Plumbing, not so much. I realized people didn't want them inside their houses. You know, he's like, so that one didn't go as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, so just, if Tattoos on the Heart, if, like, you get a chance, definitely. Very powerful.
Yeah. Very powerful. Yeah, that specifically in that book, there's a whole chapter on what success is.
Mm-hmm.
And that chapter... as somebody who, like, I can be somewhat of a perfectionist at times and can somewhat be sometimes too, like, wrapped up in, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the best thing? Is, like, this successful? And I think just, like, as a culture, we just measure success so often by numbers and by metrics. And he's like, look, this is not what success is. Mm. And he talks all about those relationships, right? And all those, all these stories of individuals that have changed him and moments that have shaped his life. And after that is a chapter that I will reread often of just like this reminder that it doesn't have to be, success doesn't have to be like this measured, can write it down on paper kind of thing, but can be, it can and is more relational.
One last thing that I want to say is, like, I just find that wisdom from that is, like, because I feel that right now a lot of nonprofits will say things like that, or churches, like, you know, I was just so much more blessed. You know, I went to a such and such thing, and I helped people who are houseless, and, you know, I was more blessed than they were, even though we're the ones bringing food and, you know, whatever. And you're like, okay, but, like, really, what was the last time you let someone shape you, right? Mm-hmm. And even, like, and for me, the wisdom is even people you don't like or don't like you, who you're enemies with or have made enemies of you, whatever that looks like, when was the last time you could say, what do I even learn from this person? Mm-hmm. What do I learn about myself? What do I learn about the world? How do I still even let that shape me and shape my understanding? That's like that guru level, right? Right. Like, you're like, whoa. So when he's saying, he's not just lip service, he's going, no, these people changed me. Yeah. I was there on a mission from God, right? And suddenly I realized, oh, no, wait, they were on a mission from God. Right. They were doing God's mission on my life. So that mutuality, right? Mm-hmm. That walking together. Yeah. So Emma has a lot. So she is well known in several circles for having all sorts of interesting hobbies and tasks. One of them is a love for comic books. Another one is a love of costumes and Comic-Cons. She goes and hangs out at cafes and restaurants, so she's kind of like the cool preacher in the area. Emma, is this true or not?
Partly.
85%.
So, Emma, yes. What are your favorite superheroes?
Okay. Is that a two-part question?
Okay. You asked it like there was more
right,
coming.
Like, and then.
And
then. I've always been a Superman person. Because I just really love his struggle to, like, fit in and be ordinary, but also respond to the needs of the world. And also that kind of dual identity of, like, here's the roles I have to play, but I also kind of save the world and everything. And how he lets... You know, there's all this, like, you know, when I was a little kid, I remember when he died. And it was, like, a very traumatic... That was, like, the first...
Superman died?
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, so he's dead?
No!
Oh. He's back. Is this like, Resurrection
okay.
Sunday?
Okay, like, I know very... So, I know very little. I know very little about the world of superheroes and comics and, like, all of that. Very little. And I could have told you that.
Yeah.
Well, that it also says a lot about me. I'm a Batman person. This is why.
Okay, but you, like, didn't know... Okay.
Okay, it was a very traumatic to me. This was
Batman,
like,
died, too.
Yeah, but Superman, no.
Questionable.
Anyway, different. Superman definitely died. And it was like a very traumatic moment for me.
Superman died. Who killed him? Wait, don't tell me that, because I want to find out.
We gotta get the comics. They're really expensive now. But that was the first, like, really traumatic, like, loss moment. And it was like, you know, this is one of my heroes. Like, this is, like, I had tied my identity and, like, I'm such a Superman fan. And then, like, there's this loss and there's all these people trying to fill that hole. And I could go off on a whole tangent about it. But anyway, Superman.
Superman. I would have never guessed that. That's, really? Like, super unique. Because that's the OG, right?
Yeah.
The first.
Yeah. And, like, my mom used to work for the Red Cross, and she had, like, this comic about, like, Superman knows how to do first aid and CPR, and, like, Superman's gonna save the world, and he recycles, and it didn't say Andy fights communists, but I think an earlier version of it might have.
Earlier version.
Actually, that's true. Yeah. I think that was a direct response. So was Captain America. See, I knew that. I know little things like that.
But,
all right,
that's
Chelsea.
Pretty obvious.
All right, whatever. All right, so Chelsea's superhero.
So, I know very little about superhero world.
This is why it's a great question. So, if you had to pick one.
If I had to pick one. Well, I think Emma's answer was real good. So, I'm gonna echo Emma.
That would be funny if you were like, yeah, I know very little, but I'm going to go with Green Lantern, you know, magazine number 67. When, you know, and you're like, oh, okay.
Okay,
I don't even know if that works. Does that even make sense, magazine 67? Aren't there numbers?
Volume?
I clearly
volume,
never connected
issue?
Comic books.
Issue?
I just
issue.
Read a Goosebumps issue. About a kid who collected comic books. That's as far as I know.
Recently?
There are issues.
Recently you read this?
yeah. Yeah, that's what am I reading and what do I recommend? It's Goosebumps.
I mean, Goosebumps.
Honestly, the Goosebumps.
I mean, you should start reading them to Eva.
Yes, yeah, I should. No, they're freaky. No.
Not all of them.
I'm still freaked out. Night of the Living Dummy? No, not doing it.
Did y'all ever read the, like, R.L. Stine books that were, like, the teenage ones?
No, I didn't.
I was not scary.
Like Fear Street?
Yeah, I was into that, and then I had some neighbors at my grandparents' house growing up that, like, would tell me I was going to hell because I was really into these books.
Wow.
And they probably would still be concerned about me.
I did.
They would still be concerned about your salvation.
Yeah, there was that. Well, so that's interesting. So growing up, right, like,
Where is this going?
So Emma heard, you're going to hell for having this R.L. Stine book. I have all sorts of religious influences growing up, and one of them were Pentecostals who basically said, Ninja Turtles, your Duke Blue Devils t-shirt, your R.L. Stine, what was the first one? It was like the Haunted House or, you know, whatever the first one was. All the devil. Like, you know, it's terrible. And I was trying to get rid of them. Luckily, I didn't throw out the books, but I, like, hid them in a box. I was like, devil be gone in a box. Now, you grew up differently. You were at sort of a pretty traditional mainline and downtown Newark. You said it was diverse. Was the downtown as happening as it is now? Was it always kind of a dynamic downtown?
Yeah. I would say it was like dynamic when I was growing up, and then there was a period like in...
Because you left. And
it was no longer cool.
I feel like that's everybody's story.
And it like really
went down.
It used
to be cool when I was there.
Yeah, no, it was cool when I was growing up. Yeah. I feel like there were more like local shops when I was growing up. Gotcha. And now there's definitely more chains.
But was it you were going to a city church or were you going to a suburban
church?
It's like a university.
It's
a university church.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
And I mean, they say the city of Newark, right? But
right.
And when I was growing up, I would have said, yes, this is like city church. And like so I lived in Brookside neighborhood, which is really close to like Kingswood. That was like more of suburbs because it like wasn't downtown Newark.
Okay.
Now I've like lived in Detroit and DC and now Wilmington. I would not call Newark a city church, but it's definitely a university church.
Yeah. I am wondering, you've had some significant meetups with various people in the community, and you had a big meetup this last Wednesday with a lot of people at a local brewery. I was kind of wondering, you know, kind of thoughts, vibes, ideas, not like, you know, big picture lay out the next 2 years sort of thing, but like, how are you feeling about Riverfront, about the Think and Drink, about the dynamic? Is it what you expected? Is it different?
Yeah. Great question.
There it is written down if you need to.
That was good. Great question, Emma. Yeah, it's been a great... I feel like time is flying by right now. It's been like a month that I've been on board. Mm-hmm. And a month of getting to know folks and lots of coffee and lots of lunches. And have just been really grateful for folks that have shared their stories pretty openly. And I've just been learning a lot about Riverfront's history and what's been done already. And... I think what excites me the most is that there are all of these different voices that are invested in this community in really different ways. And one of the things that I feel like I've heard a lot, pretty much in every coffee conversation, whatever, is that folks just want time to meet and they want time to like consistently gather. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create space for me to keep getting to know people. And then as we launch, so in the Christian church calendar, Lent is beginning soon. And so excited about diving into Just Mercy, Brian Stevenson's book that was recently turned into the movie. So we're going to have a movie night at Penn Cinema on March 8th. And then start this study on the 11th, and I'm just excited because Wednesday night, so we gathered at Wilmington Brew Works, and that conversation, like, Edwin jokes of this Wednesday come from 5 to 7 at Chelsea Tavern, and it really might be 5 to 7, but
a Wednesday night, like, it was 8:30 or so. And,
that's true.
And we got into some deep conversation that was, like, not planned and yet was good. It was, like, good just kind of as things flowed and people didn't want to leave. And finally somebody was like, it's kind of late, I gotta go. And we wrap things up. But I just love that spirit, right? The excitement to be together and to talk about official and unofficial things, to just like check in on life. And I'm just ready to do more of that. Yeah.
So if people, want to take you out for coffee or tea or anything to get to know you, number one, she is willing and available. And number two, what's your favorite tea or coffee?
Oh, it depends on the time of day. So I'm definitely coffee first in the morning and I'm not picky about my coffee. I'm not a coffee expert.
So like, hey, ran out of filters, use my dirty sock, but here you go.
Here you go.
As long as, okay.
Here you go. The first two nights in my apartment, I did not have coffee filters, and I made some paper towels work, and it was actually pretty good. That's a good random DIY. Paper towels work just as fine as coffee filters. Not dirty socks.
I'm dirty socks, kind of.
Not so much. Yeah, so coffee in the morning, for sure. And then I love chai tea. So if you have a favorite spot for chai, I'm all about new spots for chai.
Chai spot. That's why you ordered chai at IM Coffee.
Yeah, when we were at IM yesterday.
That's right.
It was not first thing in the morning.
Yes.
Right? And so...
It was a rainy day. It was perfect.
Oh, it was
perfect. I was tempted to order it, except for the IM Buzz, which gets me every time.
Gets you every time. Yeah. Yeah, I love... so my roommates in D.C. and I would joke that the tea kettle was our like most used appliance in the house. We would it was like this act of hospitality, right? Yeah. Of you walk in and immediately somebody would put on the tea kettle.
Right.
And we would pour some tea. So I'll drink tea like all day.
Yeah.
So we're wondering, bringing it back to Riverfront Church, how does it compare to some of your previous church experiences? How is it similar, different? Not judgment call-y, but like I don't know how to ask this question a different way.
No, that's good.
Okay, good.
You're like, that's good. Let me stop.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say because right now I'm like only a month in, right? But I think some of my favorite things about past church experience that doesn't always happen as quickly is folks' ability and willingness to ask questions.
Mm.
And that is already happening at Riverfront gatherings. Mm. And that really excites me, that like this space to ask questions and to figure life out together, like, is already going on. I think it also, I'm all about not having to have a building to worship in, and so I'm so excited for it to be a little bit warmer. Though we've joked, like, this winter has been pretty mild,
yeah.
And some Sundays we probably could have been at the pavilion. But I'm excited for worship to resume, and for the weather to warm up and just to keep gathering. Yeah, that's what I got.
So one of the things that we've gotten about Riverfront, some of the comments we've gotten, is that it is, it's not church the way people expect. And it's a place where people can have conversations and questions and come as they are. Have you experienced that at all? I mean, you hinted a little bit about it in your last answer, but I'm wondering how you might cultivate that or lean into that, or if you don't want to lean into that, I don't know.
No, that's my jam.
Okay.
That's my jam. My preaching professors at school tell me that I ask too many questions in my sermons. And so I'm all about like that whoever is leading that day is not the only one who has something to share in the room. And it's not the only... I wouldn't call us experts, and even if you would call us experts, that we're not the only experts in the room, right? That, like, everybody has something to share from their story, something to share from what they've read, And so that we really, I'm excited to like create worship together, right? It's not just about like what was designed to take place from a leadership perspective of like, we're going to say this prayer, or we're going to, this is going to be the topic for the day, but really believe that like worship is the most fun and most meaningful for everyone gathered when we're like creating it together. So not always having like a polished sermon, but having some thoughts and having some questions and that being church.
Do I have to ask a serious question?
You can ask whatever you want.
Okay. My fun question is, what are some things that you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? I really love to hike, and I really love to go camping. So again, I'm excited for it to get a little bit warmer, though I've been able to do some hiking this winter.
Do you ever put those together and do backpacking?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I've done a couple of, like, 2 or 3 night kind of backpacking deals along in the Shenandoah area. Those are a little bit harder to do because I will go hiking by myself for the day, and I will camp at a like a community camping spot by myself. But to do like backpacking, kind of need some people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so if you like to go backpacking, let's be friends. I think like the, so the coolest hiking deal I've done was this past August. Did 2 weeks along the Camino de Santiago, starting in Portugal and then heading up the coast. And that was 14 days at like 190 miles total. And that was all by myself, wow, which was super cool.
Yeah.
And I've been like itching to do more hiking since doing the Camino.
So you're doing about like 18 miles a day or 20 miles?
Like 13 miles a day.
13 miles.
Yeah. But some days some days were like 18 or 20 and then others were like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
So it just depended on where the next town was to stop, which was pretty cool. So yeah, I love to go camping and hiking. I really love live music and like pretty much any genre of live music. I like movies. I really love hosting people for dinner. So I live just a couple blocks from Grace, and I'm excited for that space to start being one of hosting. And it's got some really cool outdoor space. Some really neat, on the back, there's a double porch. And so I'm excited to know more people in the city to be able to have people for dinner.
Yeah.
I also can be a bit of a board game dork. And so
board game night, night alert.
I'm all
just
for it.
FYI, we did a game night fundraiser for Riverfront, and we played, I forgot what were the different games. It was mostly card games, actually, I think. Like Exploding Kittens and all these different things. But it was incredible. And actually, funny enough, we did it as a Valentine's Day event.
Because
we said, you know what? What if we made it more not the private, like, couple that goes and does something, but something the community gathers for? So we did it at Veritas, the new shop where we usually do a lot of Riverfront-related things. And we had, like, 40 people come out.
We should have done that tonight.
Yeah, that should have been... Dang. Should have thought of that. Next year. But yeah, we just called it like the love experience or something, or, you know, the love event or something not as weird as that, okay? It was something, maybe it was weird like that. I don't remember. But it was a cool flyer, and I was just surprised because 40, 50 people showed up, most of whom weren't connected to Riverfront. They were just like in the area and thought, hey, cool, you planned my Valentine's night. Thanks. Yeah. Showed up, here's a donation, had some drinks and food and games. It was great. It was
cool.
Great.
Well, we should do that again.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In some kind of form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think you've gotten a little taste of who Chelsea is, and we invite you to continue to be in tune with what's coming up. As she said, the Just Mercy, if you can give us that information again, that we'll also send out and make sure it's got all detail. But those are other opportunities to meet Chelsea, and that is on...
Yeah, so Just Mercy, we are going to Penn Cinema on March 8th at 5:05. Tickets are on us, but we have a suggested donation to Restorative Encounters, which is a super cool nonprofit that we love. So that's March 8th at 5:05 for the movie. And then on March 11th, we will start meeting on Wednesday nights at Del Pez for future... for just deeper conversation about Just Mercy and the restorative justice system.
Yeah. So those are great opportunities for you to meet Chelsea. And we will put that information on the e-news, on Facebook. If you're not signed up for whatever reason and you're listening to this, please make sure to send us a message on Facebook or send us an email and we'll get you signed up. And also meet Chelsea at Chelsea Tavern on Wednesday, February 19th. At 5:05 p.m. Come on out, hang out. We'll cover the food, you cover your drink. And continue to, as you heard, she loves chai tea and almost any tea and any coffee. So, you know, feel free to, like, invite her out and get to know a little bit more of her story and what she's sort of planning on for Riverfront. And, of course, we'll have her back on this regularly, so you'll get to meet her that way. Thanks so much, and God bless. Appreciate you tuning in.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Riverfront Church Broadcast. You can connect with us online at riverfrontwilmo.com or on Facebook. Just search for Riverfront Church in Wilmington, Delaware. May God meet you where you are and lead you where you are meant to go.